All right, welcome everyone to another Sunday evening here on peoplesinternetradio.com. I'm Stephen Robertson. This is Cancel Lickin' Ball. Sunday the 20th, March, apparently, 2016. Well, I'm going to talk about a few things tonight, some psychological things. Who knows? History, politics, all types of things going to be involved. But I have someone on the show that nearly everyone knows. Nearly everyone should know anyways. I want to welcome Del Amitri to the show. Welcome, Del.
Hi, Stephen. How are you this evening?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all. Yeah, we're going to get into some discussions. All types of things. I think we had psychological things on the plate. We had just trying to get back to the Skype chat that we had a few days ago to get some of the topics we were going to talk about. Narcissism, I think, was going to be a big topic.
Narcissism was one that you mentioned. Nationalism, tribalism, lots of isms.
Yes, lots of isms.
Basically, belief isms, really, I suppose.
Yeah.
We're surrounded with an awful lot of beliefs.
Isn't it, though?
You know, everything from communism, socialism, nationalism, tribalism, they're all isms. The isms generally, to my mind anyway, can be classified really broadly as beliefs.
Well, certainly. When I went through some college courses at uni, as it's called, a lot of times over in Europe and other countries, they taught me that there was only two isms. There was collectivism and individualism. They taught me that all of the different types of collectivism were just that forms of collectivism, communism or Marxism,
socialism,
fascism, whatever.
Nationalism. Yeah.
Nationalism. Yes.
Yeah. So if there are only, I suppose one could simplify that again to the public and the private.
Oh yes.
You know, you could simplify that to there are their views out there, and then there are my views.
Yes. Yes.
You know, or there are your views. There are your outlook on the world around us.
Yes. Yes. I think there have been some quite famous people that have said in the past. I can't recall any names right now, but they have said that socialism is just a tidied up form of communism. It's just socialism leads to communism, I believe they've said.
But don't all isms lead down that road to collectivism?
Yes, yes.
Just call it collectivism. I mean, nationalism, you're probably surrounded on your side of the pond there by nationalism because you have elections ongoing at the moment and that type of thing. So isn't that all patriotism?
It is.
Is nationalism fueled solely by patriotism?
It basically is, yes. They will throw terms at people like you and I. They'll say, what are you, a communist? Don't you want to support your troops? All good Americans will support their troops. So,
but where do they get that belief? You see, I mean, you know, what entitles them to ask that question?
Well,
I mean, surely you're just a man standing in front of them, and that you're a lot more than the sum of any of your parts.
Well, it's nothing but a form of manipulation. They want wars. So if you're not for wars, you're a commie. You know, you're a commie scumbag or something like that.
But nationalism in its extreme is solely marked by that feeling of superiority over other countries. So that's...
Certainly.
That's where that leads, you know, so...
Yeah, the stereotype. That's yeah. What a lot of times it will lead to that. Over here in America, there's basically three major parties. There's Republicans, there's Democrats, and then there's Independents. There's a lot of other smaller broken off parties, Tea Party, Green Party, this party, that party, whatever.
But they're largely kept a tree in people's consciousness.
Yes. And really, basically, two big ones, and independents are quite a bit smaller, but you know, they still have a say.
But then on a simple level, right, doesn't that come back to, we'll call it the half Nelson approach, where people, because they're full of cognitive dissonance, because they're suffering all this media input and all these social pressures all the time, these media-driven hype, meme-type pressures, surely, that translates down to how insurance salesmen sell their insurance policies. They, you know, if an insurance man was to meet you, he'll say he will not get three negatives out of you, because most people can't give three negatives. They can only give two negatives, and then they're beaten psychologically. You know, so he might say, "Hey, you know, Stephen, how are you? I haven't seen you in a while," and all the rest of it. Did you know that I'm selling insurance now? You might say no. You might say, oh dear, at this stage, if you ran into, say, somebody that had been in school with you or something, you know. And he might say, yeah, I'm with such and such a company now, and, you know, have you got a good life insurance and critical illness policy? And you might say, no, I'm fine. I just checked that out there last year, you know. But if he's persistent, he'll say, and he's trained, highly trained to operate what they call the half Nelson ideology, which is that he'll give you something that you'll half say yes to, you know. Well, hey, you know, maybe we should get together at some point in the future and sit down and have a look at your policy there, because and actually compare them, you know. But hey, not today, and maybe some point in the future. And you say, hey, yeah, you know, that sounds okay. Maybe sometime, you know, I'll run into you again. And when you get home, you find he's sitting with his 2 feet under the table, because his secretary has contacted your wife and said, hey, ran into Stephen there today, and he thought that it might, or, you know, they agreed that it might be a good idea to compare the actual policies. So can you pull it out, have it on the table there at 3 o'clock, because he's in the area and
yes,
Stephen's coming home at four, you know?
Right.
So that's how they operate, and they do that quite effectively and quite simply. It's subtle, you know, but on a national level, nationalism, see, even the word nationalism, people don't get what nationalism actually is. People don't actually make a determination on it or study it or actually
look into it. A lot of people probably never even heard of the term, actually. They probably never heard of the term tribalism either.
They might call it patriotism.
Right.
You know, I mean, you're probably surrounded by a lot of patriots. As you said, you know, a lot of people feel that, hey, you know, we should be putting our sons into battle.
Oh, yes.
Foreign battles and things like that. Yeah. But if you actually ask them, like, would their son, you know, would Johnny actually perform in his home town or his home area as he's performing abroad under that military, under those orders, you know, would he go in and take a block in New York City? You know, they'd be absolutely shocked. Oh no! You know, yeah, of course he wouldn't. But yet, that's what the powers that be are sending them away to do, for political gain, or because they believe that they're mandated to do so. So, you know, if they actually sat down and thought about it, maybe when Johnny comes home and he's had to do all these things, he's going to have a hard time adjusting back into local community.
Oh yes,
and they don't really think, you know, along those lines. If he comes home at all, maybe he's unfortunate enough to come home in a box.
Oh, yes.
With a flag draped on it.
Yeah, with a flag draped over little Johnny's coffin, or a lot of times they will just, they've been bringing the troops back from Afghanistan or Iraq or Syria, whatever type of secret operations are going on, and they'll say, yeah, Johnny died, slipped in the bathtub, not the bathtub, but the shower in his barracks, and busted his head wide open, and we couldn't save him. Sorry. You know, they'll make up some sort of a story and tell the parents, and And that's it. You're not supposed to question anything because we're the Army or the Marines, and we know what's best for you and your family and little Johnny.
Well, that's patriotism gone mad then if you don't question, you
know? Exactly.
You know, and I mean, patriotism gone mad, we must be cognizant of the fact that that is happening all the time. So, you know, it's a very serious matter for those people involved.
Well, certainly.
You know, in advance of that, like, possibly maybe question Sam, because when Johnny, I mean, Johnny comes home and he's a young man and he's got the idea that maybe it would be a good idea to sign up to this or whatever. Maybe we just want to have a look at the contract and see what's in the small print, you know?
Oh, yes, yes. It's been like, I think 4.5 years now, or close to 4.5 years anyways, when they allegedly shot bin Laden in, at that complex or whatever. And but anyways, I think that was all a farce myself, but he supposedly died in 2002, according to the Pakistanis. And
well, they kept him around for a long time.
Yeah, they kept him on ice, I think.
For a hell of a long time. There was an awful lot of fear and a lot of wars justified and a lot of invasions justified, you know.
Oh, yes.
On foot of that nationalistic approach.
Yeah, yeah.
The buggy bear. It kept the population on side, and it created that sort of patriot feeling, that patriotism, again, that we're talking about. And you know, if you give beliefs, if you adopt beliefs, it makes you quite easy to control.
Certainly it does. Yeah, I wanted to expand on that a little bit, though, Del. I believe it wasn't very long after that that there the 22 members or 20 plus members, however many it was, in that SEAL Team 6 that allegedly took bin Laden down. They all allegedly mysteriously died in some sort of a helicopter crash or something like that. I don't know the whole story, but you know, it really just sounds fishy to me. Number one, I've been told by people that they would not tell the truth. They would not even tell what type of a team or what military branch that the team was in that took someone down, whether it was a leader of Al-Qaeda or president of Guam. They just would not do that. They don't really want people knowing what forces are out there, what people do, and how they do it.
Well, that's very disappointing, to say the least. But at the same time, how does that actually relate to, you know, the average individual in America? Because if you give it away, they're going to take it. You know, if you give them that, if you empower them to that degree, of course they're going to take it. That's at a top level. You have quite a few narcissists around.
Yeah. Well, maybe it serves a purpose to give that particular branch of military service a little bit of a boost. SEAL Team 6 is a Navy outfit. You know, they're a part of the Navy, and they train for the Navy, and they do stuff out on oceans and seas and lakes or whatever. But maybe they need a little bit of a boost, and I don't know. And how do you boost something like that up? You tell the world that they took down the leader of Al-Qaeda, and then they died heroically. I don't know.
Well, that feeds into tribalism then, you know?
Yes, it does, yeah.
The state will organize, you know, different teams to do different things, and that fact of being organized into tribes then, based on loyalty to one social grouping, is easily manipulated and controlled.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it doesn't really... Go ahead.
They do that all the time, you know. I mean, you have public sector workers, private sector workers, blue-collar workers. You have all these different facets or labels that are assigned to different aspects of society. And they're all trying to keep their own tribe going, you know, within all of that. That's why you have bigger and bigger government, not smaller and smaller government. I mean, we haven't heard for quite a long time that small government might be a good idea, have we?
No, I don't believe I've ever heard that that phrase come out of someone's mouth on a TV screen.
In actual fact, all these politicians are promising whole new budgets for whole new departments and whole new sectors that they'll be controlling down the road, you know?
Exactly. That's what a lot of people don't really realize and don't understand. Well, just basic forms of rhetoric. They just don't know what it is. They haven't been taught it, and they don't realize how they're being mind-controlled. They don't realize how they're being messed with.
Well, we're not encouraged to make our own determinations and things, you know. To be determined or to make a determination comes from a firmness of purpose. And the people generally are not encouraged to do that. I mean, from a young age, aren't all your young school children encouraged to place their right hand on over their heart and to sing every morning?
Left hand over their heart and raise their right hand and...
Or whichever.
Yeah, sing to the flag.
And sing to... Yeah, I mean, what's the flag that they're singing to, you know? I mean, what is the flag? What does it represent?
Not so much sing, but a pledge of allegiance, yes.
Yeah, or pledge... Yeah, that's not pledging allegiance to their community and that type of thing. That's pledging allegiance to a belief that is just and true at all times.
Pledging to...
Quite obviously and apparently it mightn't be.
Pledging allegiance to the colors red, white, and blue and placed on a cloth.
Again, they didn't design the cloth or they didn't design the colors, so it's somebody else's belief that they're... or somebody else's enforced colors and cloth and design that they're actually pledging allegiance to. You know, so it's training a child not to actually make a determination. It's training them to grow up in a system and to take on all of these belief systems.
It is. It exactly is.
Like, if we look around us at what we need, you know, I mean, we need to eat. Okay, so the quality of food as a result of all the corporations and that type of thing is degrading all the time. You know, I think we were discussing the last day there in the Skype call that all the farmers are spreading is NPK. They're not actually looking at all the vitamins and minerals that we should be taking in every day, all the micronutrients.
NPK, what is that?
NPK, or what they spread, is nitrogen. It's the three ingredients that they spread with bag manure and... you know, bite a ton on the ground.
Okay.
But that's just driving the products. It's not actually instilling the nutrients. It's not like what you get out of wood ash or biodegradable materials, you know.
I see, okay.
It's not the full balance. And as a result, then, I saw a study there lately where baby foods, you know, the manufactured baby foods, only have 20% of the micronutrients that a baby needs to form a good body and mind. And that's appalling, you know?
Yes, it is. They probably put
If you turn it over and have a look at the ingredients, you'll see, oh yeah, it's got protein. It doesn't tell you what type of protein or how digestible it is, but it's got protein, it's got carbohydrates, it's got, you know, these... few items, when in actual fact we need, I think it's 98 vitamins and minerals every day.
It probably has a lot of fancy chemical names that you can't even pronounce and don't know what they are in it, though.
Oh, additives for taste and all the rest of it. You know, if it's raspberry flavored, I mean, that comes from I won't say where it comes from, but it comes from the extract of, generally it comes from the extract of a scent gland of some sort of a muskrat or something.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that.
You know, things aren't what we see. So, by and large, if I see something with labels on it, I tend to stay away from it. You know, I mean, if a carrot requires labels and a breakdown of nutrients and all the rest of it on it, then it's obviously processed, highly driven and manufactured, and it probably ain't that natural a product. You know.
Absolutely. I believe I heard you, or maybe it was Sean, one time on a Talk and Tea show, said that the word organic has been trademarked, and it's been...
Oh, yes, to call a product, if you want to call your carrots organic, then you must register your farm as being an organic farm. You must open yourself up to being inspected.
And you're regulated, yes.
You're regulated. You must pay a percentage of your turnover and that type of thing. Basically, if you're putting that on packaging, every time you print the word organic, you might have to give 1 or 2 cents, you know?
That's
basically a few $1,000s a year anyway. To achieve that status.
That's very, very odd. I think I was talking, I was talking Wednesday night, and somebody in the chat, I can't remember who it was now, but they were saying, you can't copyright names. And I, me and whoever I was talking to said, absolutely, you can copyright names. Most of the big stars, movie stars, TV stars, actresses, actors, singers, they all copyright their name. They all copyright their brand. Look at the word Apple.
But they register it, don't they?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, to register it, what does that involve? You're filling out a form, you're signing a form and that type of thing. You're submitting your details, and you're reducing your status to the registration. And you're paying a license fee then, an annual license fee for the use of that going forward. So
exactly, yeah.
You know, you got to pay them $100 a year to keep that registered or whatever, or else it's resold on the market, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I believe I heard one time the talk show host, Alex Jones, over here in America, I believe he said one time that they were going to start taking people that are doing what I am doing and what he's doing and what you're doing, and they're going to start copyrighting our names, copyrighting our voices. And if we don't do it ourselves before they do, they can shut us down legally.
Well, aren't they already? Whatever about our voices, our names, and all the rest of it, aren't they already registered in the system and assigned a number and an asset value, we'll say?
Yes.
And isn't that how most things seem to be working nowadays?
Apparently.
If one buys into that belief system,
yes.
Again, you know?
Yes.
But that's, we'll say, food, right? So... You know, in America there, you have the highest, I think America is the, in fact it actually is, you have the highest rate of obesity in any country in the world.
Yes, it is.
I think 2/3 of Americans will be, or sorry, 50% of Americans will be classified as obese by 2030.
Yeah. I believe it used to be a few years ago, you only had to be 40 pounds overweight to be classified as obese. I'm not sure what it is today, but...
It goes on percentage of body fat, and they did increase it there a few years ago, yeah. Just
okay.
So that less people would be classified, because I think 38%, 36% of Americans are now classified as obese.
Yeah. I also...
In Mississippi, 70%. I think Mississippi is the worst state.
Yeah.
For obesity, I think 70% will be classified as obese, even, you know, with the increased... or the looser ratings of same, we'll say, the adjustment in the analysis of same, 70% of people in Mississippi will be classified as obese by 2030.
Uh-huh, yeah. Not surprising. It's one of the poorest states, too.
Yeah. So, you know, it's... So take a look around. Like, look at all the strokes. Strokes come from two types. 85% of them are from... clots in the brain. Most of that is as a result of a deficiency in amino acids and magnesium.
Okay.
you know, the first thing they do if you did get a stroke when they arrive in an ambulance is put a drip into you, isn't it?
Yes.
Which would stabilize you, wouldn't it, normally?
Supposedly, yes.
Yeah, well, what's in the drip? Magnesium, selenium, vitamins, minerals. So what were you lacking?
Yeah.
You know, so I remember meeting a retired anaesthetist, and I asked him, well, what's the one truth you could impart to me as a younger man now that you're retiring? And he said he reckoned a huge majority of the patients that he'd seen operated on didn't need to be operated on because they, you know, their heart attacks or whatever had been stabilized by the drip that they'd received when they were picked up by the ambulance. That had they maintained themselves and gotten more vitamins and minerals into their system, they'd have repaired themselves in a few months.
That's interesting.
You know, so we have all these beliefs around us. I mean, probably the best word that people can use is no. You know, it's the strongest two letters that you can teach a child.
It is.
If somebody's going to operate on you, I mean, in America, am I right in saying, I came across a study at one stage where the equivalent of 4 or 5 jumbo jets of people a week were being killed by their doctors and hospitals.
It's been a few years ago, maybe 2012, but I believe the number was almost 800,000 people dying a year from medical malpractice.
If you ran an airline company, right, and that sort of statistic got out, I mean, how many people would you expect to fly with you?
4 jumbo jets a day, yeah.
Is it a day, right? I don't know. Maybe it was a week, but the numbers anyway are phenomenal.
Maybe it's an hour. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to find those reports again, but yeah. just for clarity. But the numbers anyway are still phenomenal, you know. If people have this belief that they're going to a doctor for a cure, and they're unaware that a percentage of the medications that they give can have side effects, the doctors can operate on the wrong parts of their body, they can operate on the wrong patient, all sorts of things can occur.
Leave instruments inside the patient.
Yeah, all of that.
Gauze.
I mean, yeah. You know, how many people actually factor that in as a consideration?
Yes. Probably not, you know, too many.
Maybe get a second opinion or think outside the box a little, or maybe have a look at how I'm causing the illness.
Yeah.
I mean, the word disease comes from dis-ease.
Yeah,
and
it does.
That might indicate to me that my body is in disease, so maybe I'd want to have a look at what I'm doing to it.
Well, Dale, we're coming up on close to the 30-minute mark of the show here. How about we take a little break?
No problem. Talk to you shortly.
All right, we'll be right back, everyone, after this. And welcome back after that little short tune we just had for a little break at the half hour of Cancel the Cabal on peoplesinternetradio.com. I still have Dell with me, and during the break here, Dell, we sort of looked a couple things up. I found an article from hospitalsafetyscore.org. And it says, Washington, D.C., October 23rd, 2013, new research estimates up to 440,000 Americans are dying annually from preventable hospital errors.
And I looked up the capacity of a jumbo jet, which is 747, is 416. So that's over 1,100 jumbo jets of people per annum, divided by 52 weeks in the year, is 21 jumbo jets a week.
That's quite a bit. That's a lot more than Al-Qaeda and ISIS kills every week.
But how come we're not hearing about all the people that are killed by negligence in our hospitals?
Exactly.
And by our pharmaceutical industry. And that's just in America.
Exactly, just in America.
You know, so at 21.26, to be precise, jumbo jets per week. That's a lot of people there that are getting harmed by that industry. And why aren't we looking at that? Why aren't the so-called politicians jumping up and down on that one?
Yeah. You know, I just had a thought, Del. here in the last few years, since Obama took office in 2008, they've been offering a lot of people virtually free college to get into the medical industry. But that comes with a catch. You get your tuitions paid for between 6 to 8 years of college to learn medicine, but you only get to make so much money once you graduate. They pretty much regulate your pay.
They're the new contract offers, yeah, for young junior doctors and that, yeah.
That's going to weigh heavily on someone after they get out of college and they start only making $40,000 a year instead of $400,000 a year or whatever. But that's going to weigh on them psychologically, and that's going to weigh on them physically.
It's going to shave a lot off the health budget that can be redirected to maybe the military budget.
Probably so. Probably so. Hello? They can't. Yeah, I'm.
And that might feed the whole propensity of people then towards patriotism, because if we get consumed, that's the bandwagon effect, right? If there's more military around, then more of our sons and daughters are joining it, and are employed by it, and it's now a greater aspect and part of our society, and it feeds into our belief system.
You know, that's a double-edged sword. As far as being a young man or a woman, not pushing yourself to be quite intelligent or intelligent enough to go into college or, you know, have some sort of a career that you don't have to go into the military, it can be a good way to make a living, but you do have the chance to go into battle in that, go overseas, Afghanistan or Iraq or Syria. You may have to kill somebody and you may have to get shot at, but you know.
Well, you may have to live with it afterwards, because the politicians and the controllers aren't living with that afterwards.
That's
They're
right.
Not in the trenches, are they?
That's right. But a lot of times over here in America, someone would only have to spend 20 years in the military and they can retire.
And what do they retire to?
A pretty good pension, actually. I think it's pretty close to what they actually made per month or per week when they were in that branch.
Yeah, but what are you doing for 20 years?
That's the
you
question.
Know, I mean, it doesn't it come at a price?
That's the question, yes.
I mean, you know, if you've had to kill 16 people or affect the killing of hundreds of people.
Or even two people, yeah.
Or even two, or hey, even one. Exactly. Or even had to point a loaded gun at somebody in order to get them to comply with, you know, your orders.
Yeah.
Isn't that a little bit crazy? Doesn't that sort of take the mindfulness out of the individual?
Certainly it does. And that's one of the big criticisms of the gaming industry, Dell. The people that invent all of the video games and the things that people play on TV, and the go to the arcades and put a quarter in and shoot 'em up games, and it pretty much desensitizes and programs young people into holding a real gun. They get this a sense of power, I think.
Yeah, well, you see, that's again a social meme, you know, that kids are now requiring or wanting Xboxes and PlayStations and all that type of thing, you know, because their friends are, because they're out there. It's like Apple when they released the iPhone, and initially there was a lot of buzz, you know, they put a lot of buzz into it, and
yes.
Suddenly now 1 in 100 people have a new phone one. And suddenly other people see them and they say, hey, you know what's happening there? And they say, oh, this is a great new phone. You got to have one. And they're releasing iPhone 2 now shortly. And now people are queuing up to get them. And, in my experience, I prefer an Android phone based upon my determination or my knowledge or experience of having encountered them. because I find an Android is much more that, and I'm paying less charges, and I'm not linked into iTunes and all of that type of thing. You know, everything comes at a price.
Yes,
but
it does.
How often do we weigh that price?
Yes.
How often do we actually think about it?
Yes.
So that's we can be blindly led along, and that's great. Because again, that's free choice. You know, if my brother wants to join the military, I'm not really going to stop him. You know, I'm going to tell him maybe, you know, it mightn't fit my belief system, but if that's what he wants to do and he thinks that that's great and he can do that for 20 years and he can retire and have a nice pension and all the rest of it, you know, if he's happy with on the price of same. Now, if he comes back and he tells me he's had to shoot somebody in the head in order to obtain that pension, then I'll have to make my determination as to how I'm going to relate with him. You know? So, we make our choices all the time, you know?
Yes. I just found something else. I went back to the main search page there on Google, and I come to the third or fourth link down. It's actually a Bernie Sanders website, sanders.senate.gov. This is in July 17th, 2014. Medical mistakes are the third leading cause of death in the U.S. July 17th, preventable medical errors in hospitals are the third leading cause of death in the United States, a Senate panel was told today. Only heart disease and cancer kill more Americans. Bernie Sanders, and then he goes on to have a little quote here. I thought that was just a little ironic. I wonder if he's talking. I wonder if he's using that same type of rhetorical device in his campaign.
Probably not.
He needs those nurse unions and all the other unions to back him.
He needs those voters.
That's right.
Those registered voters. You see, again, you know, if we define ourselves as a registered voter, or we reduce our status to just that, then that's all we are, you know. We'll be used as a method of for them to obtain the vote that they require, you know.
Yeah, be used as fodder.
Well, you know, we might be thrown in a trench down the road, but that's part of it, you know, if that's our belief system.
Yes, it is.
So it comes back, I think you mentioned initially, right, there are only two types of isms, and that's nationalism versus individual.
Collectivism.
Or collectivism versus individualism.
Yes.
So again, it comes back to that basic outlook, you know. If I as an individual think that's okay and that's cool, I want an iPhone, I want to join the military, I want to buy a certain product that seems to be advertised all the time, even though the nutrient value mightn't be great in it, and I might end up obese. And hey, you know, if I get obese, then sure, I can check into a hospital, which might kill me. But, you know, get on steroids and antihistamines and antibiotics and all of these great medical and pharmaceutical solutions, then really and truly, who can I blame barring myself at the end of the day?
Yes, absolutely.
For my beliefs, because I at all times I have choices. I can look from the outside in or the inside out. I can have a look at it and actually analyze it, or I can go with the flow.
Absolutely. But, you know, keeping that in mind, I don't believe, I could myself, as long as there was a few people with me, or someone anyways, but, you know, go off and do that sort of thing. Find some land that's away from a lot of the so-called civilized world. Be off on my own. I could do that. I wouldn't really need a lot of people around me. A lot of people don't really think that way, though. a lot of people love big cities. That's why they're in them.
I don't think that one has to move into the middle of nowhere. I think it's actually more about just making awakening to the fact that we have choices all around us. So if I walk into a store and I pick up some sort of pre-manufactured, loads of additive type food and that type of thing, I can choose that, or I can choose something healthy, you know, or healthier. You know, I can actually make those decisions quite easily, or I can choose not to go into that hypermarket or whatever. I can actually purchase I can grow my own, or I can, you know, anybody can set up a little pot on their window and grow a few herbs.
That's right.
Add to whatever they're cooking. They can cook more and buy prepackaged food less.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's healthier for us. It's healthier for our children. It's healthier for our communities. It encourages the way we need to go. It causes a ripple effect. All of these things can be very positive. And if I change my mindset a little, then that starts replicating itself in all sorts of other aspects of my life.
Yes, it does.
You know, when I'm asked to vote, or somebody says, hey, you know, if you're a patriot, you're going to vote for such and such because he's got the biggest gun. And he's going to put more, he's going to really sort out Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria and all these foreign countries because he's a real nationalist. He's a real patriot.
Yeah, we're going to bring democracy to them, right?
We're going to ram democracy down their throat, but it's our democracy. It ain't theirs.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, when we set foot on foreign soil, that's an act of aggression no matter what you do. You know, if I set foot in your house and I come to steal, or I come to beat you up, or I come to do any of those things, that is an act of aggression.
Yes, it is.
And cannot be justified on any level. You know, if we're dropping bombs on kids, if that's what our taxes are doing, we'd really want to start thinking about that.
Oh, yes.
You know, if you're subscribing to a club that's doing those type of things, then, you know, what are you subscribing to? You got to have a look at your contribution. You got to have a look at how your energy, you're sharing your time and your energy to make that.
You have to look at your morals.
Money, and you're contributing to that effect.
You have to look at your morals. You have to look in the mirror.
Well, exactly. It comes back to your outlook on what you're doing, and we make thousands of choices every day.
Well, you know, it's not so much look in the mirror. You have to see who's in the mirror. You have to see yourself. You don't, you look with your eyes, but you see with your, soul, you know, you see with your third eye.
You see with your consciousness or your level of knowledge.
Yes.
You know, I mean, if look, we get offers in the post box every single day. All sorts of offers. It might be, for example, it might be local pizza stores opening up and they want us to eat pizza 7 days a week. But is pizza 7 days a week good for us?
No, probably not.
You know, it might cause other issues down the road. We might have medical problems. We might develop diabetes, or we might become obese, or we might whatever, you know?
Yeah. I actually have a family member. I have a cousin that married into a family that has a pizza place, pizza parlor, and that's all they make is, you know, pizzas, subs, spaghetti, and all that. That's all they eat 7 nights a week, pizza, subs, or spaghetti.
but how healthy is that, you see?
Not very.
You know, I mean, okay, look, it's a business. That's what they're doing. They'll say they're serving the market and all the rest of it. But it's that deceit, it's that self-deceit that causes all of this serving ideology. The government is there to serve us. They claim they serve us. They claim they have a mandate from us to serve us. But what are they serving us? You know, I mean, take a look at the size of the medical industry and the pharmaceutical industry in America. Look at the millions and millions of people that are actually tied up in that whole industry. Right? They're all working for that industry, working in that industry. They're providing the pharmaceuticals, they're medicating the patients, they're nursing the patients, they're administering drugs and diagnosis to their patients and all the rest of it. But America is the most obese country in the world. So very simply, I'd just have one at a glance, have a look at it and say, well, hey, what are they actually doing? Because medically, they're not solving any of the problems. In fact, the problems are getting worse all the time. So you have to ask, are they ignorant? Because they don't seem to be coming up with simple solutions to the clearly defined problems. So what are they actually doing? Are any of these people conscious? Right. Do any of these people actually care?
Right.
Are they all narcissists, or are they just following narcissistic personalities?
Yes.
You know, where's the empathy in them for their actual patients? Because I mean, look, if I'm a doctor and a guy walks in and he's 42 stone in weight, right? Hundreds of kilos in weight. He's hugely overweight and all the rest of it. Right?
42 stone. That's got to be close to 500 pounds, isn't it?
Yeah. So quite obviously, his diet is completely wrong. So how will administering or operating on him or any of these things actually change, help him? You know, they're only temporary fixes and the side effects might kill him.
Yeah.
So how can I justify that without actually looking at the patient? I mean, here's a guy that's obviously eating all day long every day.
Yeah.
You know? How has society failed him that he's not getting enough exercise, that he's eating pizzas all day long, or whatever? It obviously isn't healthy food he's eating.
Yeah.
He's not exercising. Obviously, he's lost the will to look after himself, because he's let himself get so obese that it's becoming crazy.
Yes.
You know? So why has society failed him?
Has he failed himself?
Well, society has failed him because, you know, all of this easy food around him, all of this obesity-causing food.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Obviously, we're not concentrating enough on exercise, on healthy foods.
Yeah.
Right? Obviously, this guy has slipped through the cracks somewhere or another, because if he was doing any sort of physical work or enjoying life at all, he wouldn't possibly to that degree.
Yeah. Yes, I've been in that position myself, Dell. So, you know, I've been 360 pounds. I'm not sure how many stone that is. I know it's quite a few stone, but I did take a year and a half one time and exercise like crazy and lost 180 pounds.
Well done.
Yeah, I got an article in the paper, got my picture in the paper, and I even got a little a local TV station to come out to the gym and interview me there too. Had a little 2-minute spot on the nightly news.
That's a nice, bad.
Interesting little thing there. Yeah, that was back in 2006.
Well done. And you've kept it off, I hope.
No, I wish. I did keep it off for a long, long time. I kept it off for, let's see, probably until about I started doing this internet radio stuff.
keep up the exercising. We'll get a bicycle or
something. Yeah. I spending 15, 16 hours a day in front of the computer, it kept me away from the gym and kept me away from the exercise, but I'm slowly getting back into it this year. I've gone to the YMCA at least 4 to 5, sometimes even 6 days a week now, and getting a lot of exercise in.
Good. Well, keep it up. Well, what we were talking about there was the whole political belief system that people have, the whole voting registration type of approach.
Yes.
Which people generally haven't questioned. Anybody that wants to actually have a look at what they're doing there in terms of that, and that might have a look at the ASH experiment, which is ASCH. If you pop that into YouTube there, it might open the listener's eyes to, or ears really, to self-determination going forward. Because if you have a look at those studies and how easy it is to manipulate people, what they did in effect was, and I think after in Germany after the war in the 1950s, they, you know, selected people off of the street and put them in a room with four or five actors. And they found that they were able to completely control their outlook, and effectively, you know, they were agreeing after a while that black was white and white was black, in effect. And that completely turned them upside down. So given those studies were performed in the 1950s, you'd have to ask yourself how many or how might neurolinguistic programmers use that knowledge to control a population, on all these political pundits.
Yeah.
How might media shape public opinion?
Sir.
Because obviously they do by controlling inputs. How might polls be used to influence people?
Certainly.
How might memes be created via media?
Right.
You know, and put out there to help control the population. And what basis then do we actually have for commonly held beliefs? Because that's the critical question here.
Yes.
Are we leaders, or are we leaders or followers? Do we make our own determinations on issues? Do we have the ability to judge well? Because that's the definition of discernment.
Yes.
Well, and when we make the determinations, how firm is our purpose?
Yes. I've got an interesting little story before the hour here, Dal. Just a couple minutes before we take a break, and a good little break here, and have everybody get a little spot of tea. But it was about 2007. I tore a tendon in my right hand from the effects of my rheumatoid arthritis. But anyways, I went to a doctor in a town about 30 miles from me. It's a lot bigger of a town and a lot bigger of a medical system. And he did the operation on me, and after about 2 weeks, he took the cast off. And I was in therapy, and after about a week and a half of therapy, the tendon tore. It retore. So I made another appointment and went back into him, and I asked him if I could get a second opinion about the operation, and he was taken back. He was astonished. He was very, very surprised that I would ask if I could go to see another doctor about the operation. And I just thought it was funny. I don't know. Maybe
it's
your thoughts?
It's interesting that he didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he is an American of a Chinese descent, so I don't know if that had anything to play in it or not.
Well, maybe he just wasn't used to getting or having patients question his determination, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it probably was quite ingrained in him, and he probably served a lot of patients for a lot of years, you know?
Yeah.
That hadn't asked him any sort of critical question.
So exactly.
How did you fare out? Did you get a second opinion, or what happened?
I did. I drove about 75 miles into a bigger city that had a bigger medical system, and this other doctor had a lot more extensive. He actually specialized in operating on the arms and just the extremities only, you know, arms, hands, and shoulders and stuff like that. So he was a specialized doctor, and it's been almost going on 9 years that I haven't had any problems whatsoever with my hand. So things seem to have turned out right with him.
You found a better solution.
Yes, I did. Did you want to expand on any other thing before we took that break there, Dal? Or?
No, we're okay, I'd say. We've covered quite a lot of ground there on that, and we've raised a lot of questions there, and really it's up to the listener to make their own determination.
All right, then. We're going to give you a good little break here, but probably 9 or 10 minutes here, everyone, so go boil that pot of tea, and we'll be right back.